Welcome to the Bumblecast, everyone. I am your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King. And joining me as always is the man who Nintendo does what I Nintendo don't, Kyle Krause.
Hello, friend.
Oh, we're doing accent this show.
Select your vehicle. Alakazam.
You're mixing up your kart racer. We already did a kart racer episode.
I know, but I had to make a Donkey Kong reference somehow.
I hate that they changed Taj's voice in the remake.
I know, it sucks.
I mean, yeah, it's probably culturally and racially insensitive, but it was so endearing the first time through.
I'm glad you got the reference.
Well, yeah. So, what have you been up to lately, Kyle?
Well, I actually just this past Friday managed to catch X-Men Apocalypse. Went to the movies, finally. Like, a month and a half after the movie came out, I'm surprised it was even still in a theater near me, but hey.
How'd you like it? How'd it go?
I saw it, and it was all right.
All right?
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. There's not nearly enough Psylocke. It's like, well, why is there no Psylocke in this movie? She's supposed to be in this movie. Where is she? And then, of course, Jubilee gets shafted again. They put her in it for all of 2 minutes, maybe? And, yeah, the woman who played Jean Grey was not great. I guess she's from Game of Thrones. I don't really follow Game of Thrones. I don't know if she's better.
Yeah, she's from Game of Thrones, and she's excellent in that.
Okay,
so.
Well, she was not excellent in this. So I don't know what the deal was, but she's just kind of weirdly bland. I don't know. Well, I definitely preferred Famke Janssen. Other than that, yeah, it wasn't too bad. It was worth seeing. There's definitely some good action in it, and the story was interesting. I feel like they could have used Apocalypse much more. He's a lot more monstrous in the comics than he is in the movie. It's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, everything boils down to a fist fight at the end, which it's all supposed to be between Apocalypse and Professor X, and it's supposed to be in their minds, but it's all just a fist fight. It's kind of disappointing in that way. It's like a fist fight in their head, fist fight in their brain.
Mental slap fight.
A mental fist fight.
I'm thinking so hard at you right now.
I know, that's what it is. It's kind of disappointing, but all in all, not too bad. I don't want to give too much away, even though it's been out for a while, but.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it yet just because the reviews were a mixed bag at best, so.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's kind of mediocre, but
that's too bad because the last two were really good.
Yeah, I would say that if you are a fan of the previous two, you should at least see this one. And I am. I'm a fan of the X-Men film franchise for the most part. There's a few duds here and there. This one is not nearly as bad as some of the worst movies in the franchise. So that, at least there's that going for it. So what have you been up to, Ian?
Nothing that I can talk about.
Uh-oh.
Secret Project number one, which isn't entirely secret if you've been listening to some of the news here and there, but I can't officially say it one way or the other, but it should come to light soon enough. Secret Project number two just had a big productive meeting on it and moving forward and really excited about it and can't talk about it, but things are going, so yay.
Good things are good.
Finally managed to pick up the new Kirby game, Planet Robobot.
Robobot. That's
whatever. It's good.
That's how I've heard it pronounced.
It feels like the last few games they did, Squeak Squad, Return to Dreamland, and Triple Deluxe, were all them figuring out what they wanted to do with modern Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
And Planet Beep Bop Ribbity Bop is the culmination of all that. Because Squeak Squad was kind of easy for a Kirby game even. But it tried to do some new things. Return to Dreamland introduced the whole mega weapons things, which were neat, but they weren't really useful. They were, here's your item, here's where you're going to use it in this one section of level, you're done. And Triple Deluxe really started playing with the dynamic camera within the 3D spaces, but the gimmick with the Mega Berry or whatever it was called was even worse than the Mega Powers because it really wasn't a puzzle at any point. It was, here's the item, hit the button, win. With Domo Arigato Kirby Roboto, the mechas that you get and the number of powers and upgrades you can get for them allows for new forms of gameplay and actual puzzles that you have to maybe stop and think about for a half second. And it's a lot of fun. And there's some cameo bosses. Well, the whole game is full of cameo bosses, but there's a few in the true arena and in a special bonus thing that you get later on once you beat the main game that just had me squealing with glee. And oh my goodness, it's, I don't want to spoil it in case you're a huge Kirby fan, but if you get a chance, play it. It is a lot of fun. It's the best Kirby game that's been out in a while.
Nice. I'm interested. My interest has been piqued.
Dude,
but my game backlog is massive, and my motivation to play games is like at an all-time low. So I'm just sitting here like, I want that game, but I'm like, am I gonna play it?
there's that to consider.
Yes.
Well, we got two special things this episode. First thing to cover is a small technical update, and that is we are no longer going to be supported by SoundCloud.
Yep, we are discontinuing SoundCloud support for now. It may come back in the future eventually. I think helping support us on Patreon may expedite that, but...
Certainly, but as it stands, it was the smallest user base out of all of our platforms, and most of the users were spam accounts. So if you were one of the literal handful of SoundCloud users, we're sorry, but there are a number of other platforms you can use, and if... you really, really, really want us to stay on SoundCloud, please say so, because we do listen. We're a small show. Your voice is heard.
Yeah. Yeah, we will stay on SoundCloud if we get enough support for it, but in the meantime, kind of discontinuing it for now. So, but let us know if you want us to keep it around.
Another special thing about the show is we have a guest star this time around.
Oh, yeah.
Our good buddy Daniel here has been a supporter of the Bumblecast almost since the very beginning. Very generous supporter. He's bought ad space on almost... he's pretty much bought all the ad space on the episodes, come to think of it. And while normally there is a tier to buy your way into a, you know, spot on the show, considering that he's pretty much surpassed that, we said, hey, Daniel, you want to be on the show? And Daniel said...
certainly.
There we go. So welcome to the show, Daniel.
How do you do, gentlemen?
Just fine. How about you?
Oh, a bit nervous. I haven't talked to many celebrities in a long time, so a little anxious.
Any celebrities on this show?
Yeah.
Well, one, maybe.
You didn't tell me you were a celebrity, Kyle.
What? No, not me.
Well, Daniel's the guest, so who, that doesn't... what? I don't... I just write funny books. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't do anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
So we're going to put you on the spot. Daniel, just tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you to the Bumblecast? Why are you here? Why do you keep listening to us ramble on and on?
I am a firm believer that if you're going to say you support something or throw your hat behind a cause, you got to back it up with action. Put your money where your mouth is, and so that's what I do. I believe in this comic, and I want it to flourish, and I believe in the writers, so I want it to flourish.
Well, thank you very much, sir. You are a scholar and a gentleman.
Yes, we definitely appreciate it.
Don't accuse me of scholarhood. It's not a good idea.
I'll accuse you of whatever I like. And where are you calling us from today?
Oh, the natural state, Arkansas.
Oh, nice. Oh, I've never been.
We do have comic books down here, believe it or not.
I actually have a good friend who lives down there. He's a big fan of video game music and chiptune stuff. So,
oh, nice.
He's a bit of a nerd himself, so he's really into that stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, cool.
Well, going from that sample set, we can tell that Arkansas is an excellent state with an excellent population.
Yes.
Well, Daniel's joining us today in our topic, which is a kind of retrospective on that era that changed all our lives, I'm sure. The console wars.
Aye.
Always ongoing in some form or another.
I feel like the early console wars were more fun, though.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, how early are we talking?
Well, I don't think they really kicked into high gear until Nintendo and Sega really started to throw down.
Right.
I mean, well, yeah, Nintendo was kind of the behemoth that stomped everybody else out of competition briefly, but I don't know. When people speak of the console wars, they are generally speaking of Nintendo and Sega.
Right. That's about when I became conscious of the fact that there was more than one video game system to begin with the 16-bit era.
I think that was about the time I noticed it, because Nintendo had the money and they had the marketing power, and then comes Sega, the little upstart, and just got into it. And I think that's when people started to really notice it. Was there any console war before them? Did Atari or any of those guys have a console war?
Oh, yeah. Going all the way back at least to the Atari 2600, there was, what was the Intellivision, the ColecoVision, all of these little upstart toy companies, or some of them not even upstart toy companies, like huge ones like Mattel. That was the Intellivision.
Ah.
And they were all doing video game consoles at about that time. But then the home computer industry crashed in the West, and then after that, Nintendo kind of came in and was the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room. But,
throwing barrels, right. Kidnapping girlfriends.
Oh yeah, but there were a few other consoles around then too, like the Sega Master System.
Yeah,
little console you might have heard of.
Indeed.
And I'm trying to remember any other ones. There was the Genesis actually came out at the tail end of the NES's lifespan, so there was a little bit of a console war going on there. And the reason why the Super Nintendo even exists is because Nintendo decided that they just couldn't keep up with what the Genesis was doing. So that's why it took about 2 years for them to finally develop and release the Super Nintendo.
Whose side?
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you that, Ian, I think.
Whose side were you on in the war?
I started on Nintendo's side, but I gravitated toward the Sega side pretty early on. I was one of those lucky kids, I guess, that managed to have both systems. I just didn't have very many games for each of them. That was kind of the downside. But overall, I think I preferred the Genesis just because I preferred Sonic to Mario. I think nowadays I kind of prefer Mario games over Sonic games most of the time. It kind of depends. Usually, Mario games have a certain amount of quality that certain Sonic games have lacked. So, but when Sonic does good, Sonic does real good.
What about you, Dave?
Oh, good.
Here's the thing. I grew up in a really extreme blue-collar family that liked shovels and socket wrenches for Christmas. So anytime we had a console, that was like a sacred thing. So this war, I really did not participate in it. I was just happy to have something to play.
Yeah.
So all these guys that are complaining about, 16-bit versus this, bleh. It's like, no, you have no idea. I'm just happy to have something to do other than pick up rocks for a living at age 6.
Well, what did you have in the home?
We had an NES starting out there. I think we did have an Atari 2600 with like a handful of games, one of them being the infamous E.T.
Oh, wow.
And which is the one I played the most because I could not understand it for the life of me.
I don't think anyone could.
It took a long time for people to even get a handle on what the mechanics of that game are supposed to be.
But worst game ever? No, not even close.
No.
After that, there was the Genesis came out. Got that one. Still have it. Still love it to pieces. Got a SNES. Just kind of, as I got older and got money from not doing really chores, but going to work with my dad, I just added to it. I was just happy to have something new to play.
Yeah, that's kind of how I was, too. I just wanted to play video games. I didn't really care where they came from or who made them. I just wanted to play them. How about you, Ian?
I was Sega. Day one.
Nice.
We had an old Atari 2600, and that was fun, but then Dad came home one day with the Genesis packaged with Sonic 2, and I was a full convert. I was hardcore on the Sega side. Had I been able to afford a 32X and a Sega CD, I would have been all over that. And to my chagrin, I actually saved up and bought a Sega Nomad, which was more or less a handheld Genesis that had at best, 3 hours of battery life. So, yeah, that didn't take up. The whole thing was it was supposed to be you could plug it into a TV and you could plug a second controller into it. So it really was a portable console.
Yeah.
It's just it had a very tiny screen and it devoured batteries like some elder god. And it didn't really fly. This was about the time that Nintendo got over its stumbling points with the Virtual Boy and got into the N64 and redominated everything. And then Sony came in and said, hey, we got a PlayStation. And Sega said, oh, okay.
Poor Sega. I feel kind of bad for how badly they botched the Saturn launch.
Yeah. I mean, we had lots of school ground debates over the superiority of one console or the other, which given this current conversation, I feel kind of spoiled over, but, you know, back and forth, which was, you know, morally superior, Mario or Sonic, and which had the better processing power and which was better because of this or that and the other, back and forth, and ha-ha, Virtual Boy sucked, ha-ha, Saturn died on launch, ha-ha, back and forth, back and forth.
I think the, about the time where I kind of started to kind of check out of console wars, I guess, was about the GameCube era. I'm just like, I don't really care which one's best or which one everyone says is the best. I just want the one with the games that I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And at this point, it feels like it's almost kind of everyone's gotten battle fatigue because you've got the Xbox One, you've got the PS4, but the libraries between the two of them are almost identical. When you get down to the hardware specs, they are just so powerful that it doesn't really matter what they can do. It's, you know, just give me something to play on them. And the marketing hype machine, we've all gotten so old hat to it at this point. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah. Another console. It's big. It's a mortgage payment to buy into. Nah, I'll pass.
Now, there are marginal differences between the two at this point, like barely any. They use the same exact programming architecture. They're practically almost the same hardware. The only difference is like how much RAM and the type of RAM each one has, which doesn't even really, really matter ultimately. And with the revisions to them coming out within the next year or so, it's all going to just shift around anyway.
And here's the thing about the revisions, at least with the Xbox Scorpio, is that the developers said that if you don't have a TV that runs at 1080p, it's not going to work with the system. You're not going to see any advancements.
You mean at 4K?
Yeah. Sorry. So you're not only buying a console at that point, you're buying a really high-end television. So I don't know. We're moving out of console wars at this point and just getting into mass media and tech. And I don't know. That's not as fun as pitting Mario against Sonic and saying which one's better because they can run and jump on angry sun and robots that look like beetles. There's an innocence lost to that.
Yeah, the battles between the companies have all kind of, they kind of shy away from that. There's little jabs here and there, but it's kind of rare for Microsoft to just outright attack Sony.
Kind of and like, it's gotten mean-spirited, too. I mean, back in the day, Sega's ads, sure, they were snarky, but right. There was that kind of 90s punk fun to it. Now it's like Sony will fire off some nasty article about why Pokemon Go is a flash in the pan thing and Nintendo is dead. It's all analytical and businessy. It's not fun anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been something lost there. That's okay, though, because I'm on the Wii U side, so whatever.
What about you, Daniel? What do you have nowadays?
Oh, I still have my PS3, and that's about it.
Okay.
I had a lot more stuff, but a flood came through and I kind of lost a good chunk of it.
Oh, no.
And the rest of the stuff I kind of save up for bills or tithing and donations and whatever stuff. So something had to give, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. That's another aspect of this that, I mean, games have always been expensive, but now that we're all growed up and paying bills and whatnot, it's like, back in the old days, during the console wars, y'all bright and shiny-eyed, I'm going to buy all the games when I grow up. I'm going to support this company, and it's going to be great. And now it's like, yeah, I could eat, or I could get a game. I could meet a deadline, or I could play a game.
Yeah, being an adult is kind of like just made gaming something like, oh yeah, that's fun, but do I have time to do it? No? Well, dang it.
Also, the time you just have to invest in some of these. I mean, finally picked up Skyrim, and I had a week off for vacation, and I thought, I'm going to play a little bit of this, but I'm also going to get some writing in done, because I'm trying to finish a novel and a screenplay. I played Skyrim for a week straight, slept maybe 3 hours tops.
Oh, boy.
Because these things demand time like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something we covered on a previous show, is how things have been changing, the rise of the arcades, and how the consoles took over because you didn't have to invest the travel or the money. You could just sit down at home and play. But now that the consoles have become so demanding in terms of time and money, never mind, you know, games like Skyrim, but the time you have to wait for downloads and patches to come in, it's easier just to pick up your phone and play something really quick when you want to, you know, just game for a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see where things go from here as technology and prices advance, and how the market changes, especially with Pokemon Go, which we covered in another show, and how that's going to be shaping the future of gaming.
Yeah, my preference for casual experiences has kind of grown over the years. It's been like something, you know, flip open, distract yourself for a little while, and then just turn it off. I've never been one for RPGs to begin with, so it really just speaks to me a little bit better just to be like, okay, I can play this for a little while and have some fun with it, and then just set it aside and not get too sucked into it and get distracted and everything. So what about you, Daniel?
I wish, like I said, I just wish I had the time. I don't mind the flip phones games at all, but I'm kind of an idiot when it comes to technology. So these newfangled devices and their apps and their downloady things, it just mystifies me sometimes. It's like, I just remember when you just pushed talk and pushed buttons and that was it. I grew up in the boondocks. I'm still trying to figure out technology.
Back when hitting the internet button was, oh, I can't afford this. Stop. Don't connect. Back up.
Back when it used to scream at you, too. Do you remember that little dial tone?
Oh, yeah. The modem. Yep. Good old modem noises. Yep.
You have internet now.
You just wanted to download anything, you would get it done in about 4 days later, maybe six if you were lucky.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to watch this 1 minute clip, make a sandwich, eat the sandwich, clean up from the sandwich. Oh, there's the clip.
Yeah, I remember downloading like 20 megabyte game demos, and that would take about 12 hours or so, maybe. It took quite a while. That was back in the heyday of the PC game demo disc, which is something you don't even really see anymore.
Oh.
But I do, in fact, I might still have a few of them around here where it's like PC games on demo disc.
Now, there's a thought. Did the PC ever factor into the console war at all? Because I feel like that was kind of a forgotten, not really forgotten, but overlooked character in this whole skirmish.
Between Nintendo and Sega, they kind of ignored it. But the PC was a powerhouse going through the late 80s and throughout the 90s. You had games getting big like Warcraft. Those were huge games.
Oh, yeah.
The Sierra Adventure games like King's Quest and Space Quest. Those were big. And LucasArts pretty much did all their games exclusively for PC. So all the Star Wars games were only on PC for a while. So you only had like X-Wing and TIE Fighter, and then X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, because you had to combine them.
Yeah. Dark Forces, so you had like a lot of good FP shooters on there too, just anything more powerful.
Right. And of course you had things like Doom and Quake, which were huge, especially among, for their controversies.
Yeah, back when Doom was too violent. Wow.
Yeah. Now we have the new Doom, and that is freaking ridiculous and nobody cares. Ridiculous in a good way, of course.
Right, in its
violence.
I mean, think back to the original Mortal Kombat and it's so realistic and hyper violent. And then you think of the fatalities they have in Mortal Kombat X, and it's like, oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them I honestly can't watch. I can't stomach them. It's like, oh, wow, that's... Mm.
Oh, who someone
thought of this?
Their hair whitening. I'm going to cry.
Maybe I'm just desensitized, but I think they all look pretty awesome. Maybe I'm just a horrible person. I think we've established that, actually, but still.
Don't ask Kyle what that pit in the backyard is for. Just don't ask.
You're lucky I don't have a backyard.
Yeah, that makes it even worse.
Yeah.
If you don't judge my dungeon, I won't judge your pit.
That's fine.
But that's something else, too, is that to me, and I was never a big PC gamer in general, despite absolutely adoring TIE Fighter and Dark Forces 2. But it seems to me that the PC has kind of fallen by the wayside in terms of relevance in the overall industry and in the present console wars, just because the consoles that we have today can compete in terms of hardware. And it feels like whenever anything gets a PC port of a console game, it comes out really buggy or it's not optimized at all. And then the types of games that would be best suited for a PC, like your first-person shooters, I'm thinking like Overwatch and Team Fortress 2, and your RTSs where you need all those buttons because the controller just can't handle all the inputs that you need, they've kind of stagnated and fallen by the wayside because that's all there is, and everyone's already done all you can do with it.
See, I would disagree. I think PC gaming is stronger than ever, thanks to the likes of Steam and the fact that building a PC is super easy and a lot cheaper than it used to be. You can build a really powerful, awesome PC that's way more powerful than a PS4 or Xbox One for the same price as a PS4 and Xbox One. Upkeep, I will say, is still a little difficult just in terms of, you know, having to keep the operating system updated, keeping your PC clean, all that stuff. But it's really gotten a lot better. I'm a big PC gamer, so I've dealt with all this stuff. I dealt with it all throughout, at least from the mid-90s onward. And it has gotten a lot better. And Steam has really helped move things forward. And I think PC game sales are stronger than ever just because of digital storefronts. And the fact that it's a lot easier to get into PC nowadays than it used to be. The technical limitation or the technical requirements of the user are much lower than they used to be.
All right, look, just because I'm wrong doesn't mean you have to go on and on about it.
That actually was true for a long time what you said. So I don't think you are wrong. I just think you're not correct now. I didn't know how else to phrase that. I'm sorry.
I loved it. That was fantastic.
As for looking towards the future, we have Nintendo's mysterious NX, which we still don't know what's going on with it. This thing has been driving me crazy. They announced it in passing a long time ago. We know it's coming out in March. But we don't know what it is. Is it a handheld? Is it a new console? Is it something to do with the mobile network that they're building up? We don't know what the stinking thing is.
Yeah, I have no clue. I'm kind of interested, vaguely. I'm looking forward to it. Just find out what it is. But, I mean, it'll probably be a little while before I pick it up. I'm always a late adopter anyway.
Sure.
But I'm vaguely interested. The controls for Zelda Breath of the Wild kind of indicate that they are definitely ditching the touchscreen aspect of it. Almost surely. They may not, but Zelda Breath of the Wild isn't using any touch controls or anything whatsoever. So, I don't know. That seems to kind of indicate that they're leaning away from touchscreen controls.
So I wonder then if it will be backwards compatible with the hardware so that if you want to play a Wii U game, you can use your pad thingy, but that the games built for it exclusively will be moving in a standalone direction?
Yeah, maybe they might see, they might be able to have a way to sync up the gamepad with the NX, but I don't know. That's a possibility.
Do you remember when the PS2 offered backwards compatibility?
Yeah, it had the PS2 that had backwards compatibility all the way through its life.
Are they the only one that did that? Because I can't think of any other console that did, and I can't help but think, what a great advantage, what a great selling point that would be.
Well, the Genesis would have Master System backwards compatibility, but only with an add-on. But it was compatible with the whole thing, so with the whole library.
I think like even newer stuff like the Xbox 360 or
right.
Nintendo Wii U, like I don't think any of them have jumped on this. I think surely it's possible.
The Wii was backwards compatible with the GameCube for a long time, but then they revised the hardware and got rid of that, so...
Oh, I didn't know that. The whole reason I've been holding onto my Wii was to play GameCube games.
Right. That's a good thing. You want to keep hold on to that. Because, they revised the hardware to get rid of the GameCube compatibility. All the controller ports and everything are gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hey.
It's weird. Other than the PS3 being backwards compatible with PS1 games, I don't think there's been anything else.
I remember being really rankled when the Wii U came out and they said any virtual console games that you bought on the Wii, you can rebuy for a discounted rate on the Wii U. And it's like, No. I already bought these things again.
Mm-hmm.
Let me play what I've purchased within the past 5 years.
Yeah, some cross-buy would be really nice between the 3DS and the Wii U and the old Wii. If they would just do that. Nintendo, you're killing me here. What are you doing?
I don't know. Maybe NX will be what we've all been waiting for in terms of backwards compatibility and have the ability to play the virtual console stuff and pretty much every disc that they've come out with since the GameCube.
Yeah, I'm hoping they'll unify the platforms. That would be really cool.
That'd be crazy, but, you know, throw us a bone here.
Yeah, Sony kind of did that with the Vita, but of course nobody bought the Vita, so...
I haven't even heard about that. What is this?
It was the successor to the PSP, which had, what, two versions? I can't remember. It was the PSP number something and the PSP number something else.
Yeah.
But the Vita was basically Sony's answer to the DS and 3DS, where it was a fairly powerful handheld with a touchscreen on the back, which, as far as I know, didn't really do much of anything, and had... I believe it was mobile data, so long as you had a carrier. I think it was exclusively through AT&T and Bell.
Yeah, you could get an AT&T version of it, or you could just get a straight Wi-Fi connected.
And it had a lot of ports of PS2 games, some PS3 games too, I think.
Yeah, and it also has a lot of quirky Japanese games coming out for it right now. That's all that's coming out for it.
Yeah, it seems to be a very niche
mm-hmm.
console in terms of you either have all the games you already have on your other PlayStation consoles, or you have very weird, eclectic Japanese titles. And I think that's part of the reason why the PSP just didn't go through. That and the price point, because holy mackerel, that thing was expensive.
Yeah. But you can buy a lot of PS3 and PS4 games, and many of them will also work on the Vita. I think... almost all, if not all, of the PS1 and PS2 classics are cross-buy, so if you buy it on one console, you get it on all the others, which is really nice and really handy, and Sony's doing it right, so I'll have to give them props for that.
Sure. And when we say you can play it on the Vita, it's that it reads the data off your console and streams it to your handheld. It's not like you're trying to cram the disc into a handheld system.
Well, you can do that with some of them, yeah, but there's also certain ports that were specifically for the Vita. That if you bought it on one, you get it on the other system as well. So, yeah, you can either stream it that way or you can, or with some games, there's actually a native PS Vita version. So,
kind of wish we'd have some 3DS support on the Wii U just to make use of that bottom of screen, because I would love to be able to play Kid Icarus Uprising on an actual television.
Yeah, there's only one game that works that way, and that is Smash Brothers 4.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't even really work that way. It just acts as a controller, but still. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Daniel?
Just my apologies for not being very into the console wars growing up and just not being able to afford stuff. Sorry, guys.
No.
You don't have to be sorry about that at all. I couldn't afford anything either. I just had the consoles. I didn't have any games for them. This was the height of the rental era, so most of my games were all rentals.
Oh, God, the rental era. There's a topic.
Oh, man. Yeah, we could do a whole show on the topic of rentals.
Years. I was there for all that.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
The ship sank.
Whew. Yeah, and it sank fast, too.
Maybe we'll have you back and cover the rental era as well.
I don't know who thought of Netflix or Redbox, but they are geniuses.
Yeah.
Here's the crazy thing. The folks who came up with Netflix, it was Netflix. They went to Blockbuster and pitched the idea. They were reportedly laughed out of the office, so they started up the company on their own.
Yep.
Good for them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's usually how it goes. It's this really weird thing. I mean, think about what happened between Sony and Nintendo and why Sony even exists as a console platform today.
Mm-hmm.
They just, it wasn't that they got laughed out. It was so much as that the whole deal for the Nintendo PlayStation just fell through. And Sony was like, well, fine, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home and I'm going to make my own console.
And so the trick is, if you get laughed at, come back with a vengeance.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes. Gotcha. That's how you do it.
There's your lesson, kids.
Yep.
All right, so we're going to move on to the Q&A section, but before we get to the priority or the regular Q&A, we're going to have our guest have a special question all to himself. Daniel?
I did have one. You mentioned that your pop bought you your first gaming console ever. Was gaming like a really big thing in your family? Like something that really brought you guys together, a good family time?
Yes and no. My mom wasn't into gaming at all. And it took her a while to warm up to the idea of it not being a waste of time, but an actual recreation. But I would say that we did kind of come together on a lot of things. As I mentioned in the past, my younger brother and I played Sonic 2 as Sonic and Tails all the time. And when we got the N64, it became this kind of family mission to beat Mario 64. You know, we were kind of tagging out throughout the day. It's like, okay, I got 3 stars here, and I couldn't find all the red coins in this one, so you go. All right, take it over. All right, I've almost got this to this point, and yada, yada, yada. And there was some gnashing of teeth and tearing of hair when the youngest brother deleted the completed file by accident.
Younger brothers, I would yell at mine, but I don't have one, so.
But that same younger brother is now reliving my Genesis-era carts, the original carts, on that Nomad. So it's all good. It's all good.
Awesome. I actually got into gaming because my parents bought an NES for themselves. And I was 3 years old and they decided to show me what video games were and they have regretted it ever since.
Oh, that's too cool. That is so cool.
Yep. My dad kind of, he's gotten kind of crotchety in his old age. He doesn't really care for video games anymore. My mom is a hardcore World of Warcraft player, though.
That really cracks me up every time.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep. And I have really good memories of playing through Super Mario Bros. 3 with her. She never really got into Sonic. She didn't really care for Sonic. It was too fast. But she loved Mario.
So. Well, that's cool. That's awesome.
Yep.
Mine tried to play crazy.
Games have impacted our future and, you know, who we've chosen to spend our lives with, because my wife and I, we play games all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I had a small windfall of birthday money and went to GameStop and found a bunch of games I'd been meaning to get. And now that they're not $60, but like $10, it's like, hey, let's just load up here. So, you know, one of the games that I picked up was specifically because multiplayer, something we can play together.
Yeah, that's always fun. What was that you were going to say, Daniel?
I was just going to chip in just from my own family video games. They mostly just did work, but when my dad discovered Virtua Cop for Sega Saturn.
Ah, yes.
He's a deer hunter, so his accuracy was frightening on that thing. And he needed to practice more.
Nice.
And mom just played Crazy Taxi. Just, I don't know. She was screaming the entire time and apologizing to people. So I guess it was helping her be sweeter, maybe. I don't know.
See, when I hear Crazy Taxi and screaming, I assume she was screaming and screaming obscenities at people.
No, she's apologizing the whole time.
Okay.
It's adorable.
That's even better.
That is fantastic. I love that.
The Big RG wants to know, assuming the issue will finally be out when you get this, do you plan on elaborating on the civilization of the trolls along with Witchcart's backstory?
Eventually, yes. The particular issue that we'll address this isn't out as of this recording. I don't believe so, anyway. But it will. I am setting things up to be explored. That's basically been everything since the reboot, is setting things up to expand upon it. So we're going to get more on the trolls. We're going to get more on Wendy's backstory, more on her interactions with Walter, all that jazz. I want to, at some point, show how the Witch Carters came into her service and why, and blah, 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 blah. There is years and years and hundreds of issues worth of material right now. So we'll get to it eventually.
Why are you doing all this world building? What are you setting up for? Gosh. It's all this crazy stuff.
I'm in this for the long haul, man.
It's all this crazy stuff going on. All these worlds that you're building. I just don't know, man. I don't know. Are you sure this comic
has... I got a sickness, and the only cure is world building.
Are you sure this comic has legs? I mean, it's only up to issue 284.
Oh, it's got legs, and I go whirly, 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 whirly.
It's got legs, and they already took off. All right. Unknown Shadow 675. is asking, as the Sky Patrol seems to be the counterpart of the Death Egg, does it have space capabilities?
I wouldn't say it's a counterpart, unless you want to say flying base. But the Sky Patrol is way, way, way out of the Death Egg's league. The Death Egg is the end-all, be-all flying battle station. The only reason it isn't doing more damage is because it's critically underfueled. The Sky Patrol is a formidable flying base, probably on par with, like, we'll say, the Egg Carrier in its various incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you had particular circumstances, it would not really be in a good shape to fight the Death Egg, even on a bad day. Well, bad day for a good day for the Sky Patrol. Something to keep in mind is that the Sky Patrol, the reason why its defenses are so high is because it's running off of Eggman tech. They have an Eggman-built shield generator. That's the part of the reason why it's got so much oomph. So, if you want to say that it's, you know, the flying base of the heroes versus the flying base of the bad guys, sure, but they otherwise not even remotely the same. In terms of space capabilities, no. It is strictly atmospheric.
But hey, come on, Rotor and Tails could whip something up.
Well, I mean, if it got to the point of, oh, gee, we need to go to space, between the two of them, sure, they could figure something out. But
oh, yeah.
As it's designed, no, it's right. Supposed to be a comfy way to get from here to there.
Yes. All right. Next question comes from our good friend Andrew D. You mentioned that you imagine the characters from the Antiverse, or whatever Mobius was considered. That's Mobius, Mo-E? I don't know. Was that still pronounced Mobius?
There's been some discussion over how that should be properly pronunciated. I always said Mobius.
Mobius?
Mobius, because I'm not saying it right, because it's supposed to be something between an umlaut and that kind of O-E sound, but... Mobius with an E. Yes. Anyway.
Yes, evil Mobius. crap. I start over. You mentioned that you imagine the characters from the Antiverse would have the same voices as their Prime Zone counterparts. So does that mean that Smalls the Cat was indeed the Mobian counterpart to Big?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Okay. Are there any other voice differences you've thought of for characters and their counterparts between the two zones? And what would Mobian Ivo Kintobor sound like? Jim Cummings' normal voice?
I mean, aside, and if we want to go back to just strictly, you know, Mobius and Anti-Mobius, there wouldn't really be any differences in the voices. It would just come down to inflection and delivery.
Right.
In terms of who Ivan's voice would have been based off of, that's an interesting question. Because in my mind, as soon as he put on the Eggman design, he was the game voice.
Yeah.
And as time went on, especially now, I'm writing Eggman with Mike Pollock more in mind. But given that Ivan was definitely more based off of the old Jim Cummings Robotnik early on, of course, how could you, can you even imagine Jim Cummings being so soft-spoken and gentle in his delivery? I can't even imagine what that would sound like.
Well, he's Winnie the Pooh, so...
Oh my god, Ivan Kintobor sounds like Winnie the Pooh. Retroactive word of God. Anti-Robotnik, Ivan Kintobor sounds like Winnie the Pooh.
You're welcome. I think
Sir, Scrooge is kicking down the door. Oh, bother.
I think I've ruined everything forever.
No. You made everything better.
Okay. Well, I'll leave that up to the listeners. So,
Meg walks in. The wonderful thing about triggers is triggers are wonderful things.
Yes. So essentially, the voices are the same, just the delivery is different.
Yeah, I like that.
That boils it down. Okay. Alrighty. Up next, we got one from Sonic Blue Ranger. Has Sonic explored the multiverse outside of the worlds featured in Worlds Unite?
No, until the games say otherwise. Because I was never expecting there to be another classic era story, and here we got Sonic Mania coming out.
Yeah.
So... if they come out with a game that says, oh yeah, Sonic went off and visited the entire Sega multiverse at one point, didn't you know? Then yeah, sure he did. But for now, no, his multiverse hopping adventures are restricted to Worlds Unite and obviously the Rush series with Blaze's World.
Alright. I'm assuming that could come into play in the future. I mean, you probably don't have any plans, but it could.
I mean, the Genesis portals are there for a reason. If we need to go popping around places,
hey.
we have a convenient plot hole to take. Yeah.
Literally.
Exactly.
Yes. Gotta have them Deus Ex Machinas ready to go. Got one from Metal Skulk Band here. If Sonic could get another spinoff, so I think they mean the comic series, which characters would have the potential for their own book? I'm talking about story potential, not popularity.
And there is the key qualifier.
Right, because popularity is very important.
Because if we were going to go off of popularity, the only legitimate answer would be Shadow.
Right, yes.
And I would give my non-existent wisdom teeth to get a Shadow and the Agents of Gun ongoing. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be really cool.
But in terms of full-on spinoff... I don't know if it would sell, but it would be fun if we got a Freedom Fighters book. I don't think any one of them alone could carry a readership, but together having their own adventures around the planet might be kind of fun. And it would also, in a way, free up the main book, because one of the big problems with an ensemble cast is when you have certain characters show up, the question is always, well, where's everybody else?
Right.
So, if they were, I don't want to say sequestered, but if they enjoyed the freedom of their own space, shall we say, then Sonic could be gallivanting the world on his own, and there wouldn't be a question of where are the others, because we know where they are. Now, that being said, Sonic is prone to going off and doing his own thing, so it's not like he has to be locked down with the FF of all times, but... It'd be an interesting way to take things. I don't know if anyone else could really support an ongoing by themselves. Maybe maybe Silver, if you took it kind of the way Marvel Comics' Exiles was, gallivanting off to various time periods and alternate realities and kind of pulling the Dark Interjack motif of him going to different worlds and righting wrongs. Not always the most successfully, but, you know, it's Silver. He tries. He means well. That could be fun.
It could be interesting, yeah.
It would be interesting to tackle a Tails book, because Tails is a supporting character by design.
Yeah.
From the ground up. He is meant to be the foil to Sonic. And I don't know if that kind of character can carry a book as a leading role, but it would be interesting to give it a shot. I don't know. In terms of...
Well, they tried once.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be interesting to give it another shot, maybe.
Right,
but
right.
You also run the risk of him stepping on the toes of the main book, because what would he do differently than Sonic, ultimately? Because they're both out to, you know, have adventures and stop evil and whatnot. Their approaches would be different, but they would ultimately be pursuing the same goals, I guess. I don't know if anybody could really carry a book solo, but they do have individual strong stories for sure. So that's why we have Sonic Universe.
Yeah.
So I guess it boils down to, I need another Sonic Universe, and we just tell more Sonic stories.
What's beyond a universe, Sonic? I don't even know, man. What, you just shot yourself? You guys shot yourselves in the foot by just outright calling it Sonic Universe. You shouldn't have gone that full step.
Sonic and Tales of the Freedom Fighters, Sonic Other Stories, Sonic World Adventures.
Sonic World Adventures already taken.
Only in Japan, yeah, and I put an S at the end of Adventures.
Adventures, Sonic Adventures. It's like Disney Adventures, but not.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Go ahead and cut the world out of it.
All right, one last question from Redhammer. Favorite Sonic / Mega Man cover of recent years? I like the Sonic the Hedgehog 269 variant cover of Wrestling Eggman by T-Rex. That's a good cover.
It is, and there are so many.
I know.
I kind of misunderstood the question at first, because like Sonic and Mega Man, well, obviously the giant poster by Ben Bates. I'm counting as one cover.
Yeah.
But they mean any covers, so...
Right.
Oh, goodness, I don't know if I can pick. There's the...
Any of...
Kind of send-off cover by Ryan Jampol of the whole Mega Man gang playing in a band. Any
cover by Rafa Knight.
Oh, sure.
Any
cover. Any of the Evil BFF Eggman Wily covers were gold.
Those were good. Those were good.
The T-Rex cover with the kind of schematic of Silver Sonic, that was boss. I'm always a fan of the triptych covers, so Panic in the Sky, with that's coming. Love that.
The four-part cover, which with the new Freedom Fighters, is that the one? Is that the one you already mentioned? I forget what issue.
No, that was the Ben Bates one. That was Countdown to Chaos. That's an excellent one as well.
Yeah, that was the reboot issues, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm talking about Panic in the Sky, which is the arc that's going on right now.
Right. There are too many covers, and they're all good.
I really like the duality in the number 278 and 279 covers, because you've got Sonic on the one, Werehog on the other, in mirrored poses, and the first part's got all the heroic Freedom Fighters in the background, and then the Werehog one has Eggman and the Desert Raiders, which is just a little first hint that they may not necessarily be the goodest of guys.
Ah, there it is. Sonic Universe 54 with Mega Man and Sonic, you know, punching through the cover, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and kind that of is freaking that. Cool. Just the fact that it's Sonic and Mega Man is just like, yes!
Kind of along that lines, cover for Sonic number 264 with the Werehog is tearing through the cover with his claws and you see the page through it.
That is a really good one. Sonic Universe 51, that's the character select. That's really cool. Basically, all of the Worlds Unite covers, or Worlds Collide covers, were good. Worlds Unite had good covers, too. It's basically just like, yes, Sonic and Mega Man in one book. I'm happy. part 12 with Super Sonic and Super Mega Man. Yes. Sonic 251. Those are good. Anyway, yes. Good covers, all. All of them good covers.
I was just trying to see if there were any variant covers, but like you said, there's so many covers to go through.
I know. I'm sitting here like, oh, man. What's all these covers?
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting a few, but they are all so good. There's so many good covers. So there's a few. There's a few. Before we get to the shout-outs to the Q&A, we're going to do a little bit of shout-outs of what we've got going on. Daniel, is there anything you want to plug or anywhere you want to direct the fine listeners to the Bumblecast?
Oh, it's just, I don't know, maybe just a reminder to hit up Patreon if you're listening, and if you like the show, by all means, support it.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
As for me, if you want to follow what I'm doing, go to BumbleKing.com. That's Bumble like the bee, King like the reigning monarch. Or find me at Twitter, at IanFlynnBKC.
Or you can find what I'm doing over at the KNGI Network, at KNGI.org. You can follow me at KyleJCRB on Twitter. Or you can check me out streaming video game music and video game music remixes every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Over on the 8BitX radio network at 8BitX.com.
We'd like to give a shout out to all the patrons who have helped us get where we are today. Give a call out to Alex P., Eshyavanovich9X, Connell T., Justin G., Samuel P., Daniel L., Fancy Fool, Mike B., and our very special guest for today, Daniel H.
Merci beaucoup, monsieur.
De nada.
Muy bien.
Gracias, gracias.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
That's going to wrap us up for this episode of the Bumblecast. Daniel, thank you again for joining us. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time on the Bumblecast.
Bye-bye for now.
Au revoir.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.